Chapter 17, Honoring My ADHD Positives. I once took part in a discussion at a national ADHD conference on the subject, Can ADHD Ever Be Positive? It was sparked by Dr. Hallowell's belief that ADHD, if properly managed, is positive. Is there anything positive about having this disorder, even when properly managed? Or does getting our ADHD properly managed make our tough lives less difficult, but not exactly positive? The often cited positive attributes of ADHD are risk-taking, novelty-seeking, creativity, empathy, and curiosity. Are these characteristics truly a part of ADHD in the same way disorganization, procrastination, impulsivity, and distractibility are? There is doubt about this. According to Sam Goldstein, PhD, no research shows consistent positive traits among people with ADHD. I am reminded of Louis Braille, blind from birth, who, when asked if he wanted to have sight, answered, "I would prefer more sensitive fingers." He did not understand what the other choice, sightedness, would be like. He believed his life would be easier to navigate if he had fingers that were more sensitive. Likewise, some entrepreneurs, some quite successful, value their ADHD, saying they would not want to be without it. However, even these individuals will admit their ADHD is not a total gift. Glenn Beck, a conservative radio host, has said his ADHD is a gift for his work, but not for his marriage. Despite their successes in life, Ty Pennington and Michael Phelps have been arrested for drunk driving. I believe most who view their ADHD as a gift fall into the hyperactive, impulsive presentation of ADHD. The high-energy aspect of the disorder helps provide them with creative, out-of-the-box ideas, fueling their pre-existing drive to be successful innovators. However, for those of us with inattentive ADHD, it is another story. Dr. Hallowell writes about unwrapping the gifts of ADHD. For me, this conjures up the image of a beautiful woman on Christmas morning, slowly opening her presents to marvel at her gifts, but unwrapping the gifts of ADHD is not like that. It's like receiving a stack of Russian dolls, where removing one only reveals another, then another, then another, until you finally find the tiniest treasure deep inside. Rather than unwrapping a gift, I think finding the positive aspects of ADHD is like jumping over a series of hurdles before claiming your prize. Here are some of the hurdles. Parents or teachers who did not recognize our ADHD during our childhood. A widespread belief that ADHD only exists in hyperactive little boys. Stigma about ADHD and people not believing it is an actual medical disorder. People who minimize the challenges of ADHD by saying, everyone has a little bit of ADHD. Physicians and therapists who believe you can't have ADHD if you did well in school, or who only see depression or anxiety and not your ADHD. Problems with procrastination, disorganization, distractibility, forgetfulness, time blindness, low self-esteem, masking, rejection sensitivity, and many more. Those of us with ADHD will never experience life without it. Perhaps, like Mr. Braille's sensitive fingers, our disability gives us special abilities, but we will never know if these abilities make up for what we lack. The question for me is not whether ADHD is a blessing or a curse. My question is, am I making the most of what I have and who I am? There is no doubt that many people overcome their challenges with ADHD and thrive. But even Dr. Hallowell, who says there are positives to having ADHD, modifies this by saying, if well managed. We progress if we work to develop the positive aspects of this disorder. It reminds me of the phrase, what we focus on grows. If we focus on the negatives, they will grow. If we focus on the positives, they will expand. It is our choice. Lisa Post, my first friend with ADHD, wrote about her experience with ADHD for a newsletter we sent to members of ADD Resources. This is a shortened version. As I journeyed from a negative to a more positive view of ADHD, I enjoyed the moments when I recognized and praised myself for new behaviors, minor accomplishments, and completed tasks. I recall where I started and acknowledge how far I have come. My journey has been difficult, and often I wanted to quit, but I made progress toward my destination. I am on the right road, traveling in the right direction. Positive thoughts nourish me, so I keep traveling. I learned to travel lightly, no longer carrying baggage from my past. I am a seasoned traveler, capable of figuring out how to pass through any rough landscape. I am confident in my abilities and strong in knowing I survived. As my journey gets easier, I even enjoy it. I travel down the open road of life, sometimes skipping, sometimes trudging, and sometimes limping, but usually with a song in my heart, a twinkle in my eye, and a smile on my face. My journey through life is the adventure I dreamed it would be. My life improved after my diagnosis, but even before my diagnosis, my ADHD drove me to live an interesting and exciting life. I was always willing and eager to take on risks and challenges, especially of a physical nature. I value physical activity. As my body parts wore out or suffered injuries, I eliminated several sports I enjoyed. However, I read that rowing was easy on the knees and provided a strenuous workout. After my second total knee replacement, this time to my right knee, I strengthened my body on the rowing machine at the YMCA. One night, I had an inspired thought. I want to row on the water. I searched the internet for rowing instruction and located the website of Larry, who offered lessons on Commencement Bay just down the hill from where we live. Although I had a distressing history with Commencement Bay, my desire to row on the water overrode my residual fears. Larry's website stated, "Anyone between 12 and 60 can learn to row." I was 74. Would my age be a deal breaker? I emailed him, explained my interest, and mentioned my age. Larry sent a positive response, giving his age as 75. His first lesson was free, so potential students could make an informed decision about continuing with the lessons. I took my first lesson in May 2018 when the air and water were brisk. Larry helped me into an open water shell that is more stable than a flat water shell. I quickly realized rowing on the water is more complicated than rowing on a machine. More muscles are engaged to keep the skull in balance. There are the oars to manage. I had to place them vertically in the water at the beginning of the stroke and rotate them at the end when taking them out of the water so they were parallel to the water before starting another stroke. I could not let the oars dig too deeply into the water, and I could not raise them too high when I brought them out. I had to cross one hand under the other hand so the oar handles did not collide. There was so much to learn, and I was overwhelmed. I rowed down the waterway with Larry close by in his scull, giving me instructions. On the way back, when the lesson was over, I had to move out of the way of a boat cruising by. The boat's wake pushed my scull toward a boat moored at a nearby dock. Larry shouted, "Don't let the oar get behind you!" What did he mean by that? I soon found out. The scull capsized and I was pitched into the water. I could not climb back into the overturned scull, but I was not worried. Even fully clothed with my shoes on, I could swim to the nearby dock. That was when I learned the dock was 2 feet above me and I could not hoist myself out of the water. Now I worried. So near and yet so far, and I was getting cold. Larry solved the problem. He rowed forward so the front end of his scull went under the dock. This maneuver stabilized his scull. I crawled onto the scull's deck and sat there while he rowed us back to shore. That was my introduction to rowing on Commencement Bay. I didn't tell Steve about my inauspicious beginning. I intended to return for additional lessons, and I didn't want him to talk me out of it, as we both remembered my near death in Commencement Bay years earlier. Initially, I was anxious whenever waves rocked my scull. Would I fall in the water again? With practice, I learned to rest the oar blades on the water to stabilize the scull, and overcame my fear of capsizing. But I never developed the confidence to be on the water by myself and recognized that I never would. Rowing is a perfect activity for someone with ADHD. It engages the body and the mind, requiring us to focus on executing each stroke with proper form. Whether inside on a rowing machine or outside on Commencement Bay, rowing is now my favorite physical activity, a challenge I have fully embraced. Dr. Rakesh Jain, a psychiatrist, believes one symptom of ADHD that should be included in the DSM-5 but is not, is how often we will not attempt something because we fear failure. Our history of past failures stops us from trying again. Brendan Mahan, an ADHD coach, calls this our wall of awful. I knew Bruce had a wall of awful. When he was a child, he would not try anything new unless he was sure of success. But I didn't have a wall of awful. I'm not afraid to try things. Nevertheless, the longer I thought about it, I realized I too had a wall of awful. Graduating from Wheaton College required a certain proficiency in a foreign language. I didn't pass the language proficiency test and had to take a year of beginning German at college despite taking 2 years of German in high school. I told myself, I can't learn a foreign language. I didn't try to learn the local language in Malawi with the Peace Corps. When vacationing in Mexico, I didn't know more than por favor and gracias. It felt disrespectful not to attempt more, but believing I cannot learn a foreign language held me back. As a child, I took piano lessons for 3 years, but never progressed. No one would ever want to hear me play. I can't play a musical instrument was added to my wall of awful. After my ADHD diagnosis, I heard a clinician say, people with ADHD can learn anything. They just have to learn the way that works for them. I bought a classical guitar and took lessons for over a year, trying to learn in a way that worked for me. But I never found it, and sadly concluded again, I cannot play a musical instrument. When I was 10 years old, I tried out for our church choir. My sister Melissa was a choir member, and I attended a practice with her. I sang the first hymn when the choir master abruptly stopped us and called out, "Who is the monotone?" I was the only new person. I was the monotone, so I told myself, I can't sing. Whenever I pondered what I wanted changed in my life if reborn, how often do we ask ourselves this question? I wanted to play an instrument or sing. When I told Larry, my rowing coach, I can't sing, I'm a monotone. He replied, my wife teaches singing and claims she can teach anyone. His response made me wonder if I were not a hopeless case. I signed up for weekly singing lessons. It took a year of lessons for me to match pitches. For the uninitiated, this is step one for singers. Hear a tone and match it with your voice. This is what orchestra members do when the first violin gives them a tone. They check their instruments are tuned to match the violin's tone. Children have a natural ability to match tones if they are encouraged in their singing. If not encouraged, or as in my case, discouraged, the ability fades away and it is a long, slow road to recovery. I had no goals for my singing lessons until I heard about the Tacoma Refugee Choir. It meets weekly at the church I attend, although it is not affiliated with the church. I participated in one of the choir's public sing-alongs and had fun, then joined the non-auditioned choir and attended its weekly practices. I shocked my singing teacher when I told her I joined the Tacoma Refugee Choir. I imagine she thought I was not ready for public performance. The choir members are refugees and people who warmly welcome refugees. Although I am the oldest, it has people of all ages, and many have outstanding voices. They step forward to sing solos while the choir joins them to sing the chorus. I have sung in 2 public concerts, one at a local university where students and community members watched and later joined us in singing, and the other in a Christmas program with the Tacoma Symphony. The songs we sing are emotional, about refugees wanting homes to be safe and to be valued. A student made a video of our program, and watching it on the choir's website brings tears to my eyes. Myth: ADHD is something created by pharmaceutical companies to increase their profits. Fact: if you go back a century in medical literature, you read descriptions of children who sound as though they have ADHD. It is a condition found throughout the world in children and adults.